Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Black Freethinkers on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us today. We have Mandisa Thomas of Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, or Black Nonbelievers.
Yes, now Black Nonbelievers. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we have Kim, Miss Kim from Black Freethinkers.
Yes, Kimberly Veal, for those of you who haven't seen the article. Kimberly Veal, Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, Black Freethinkers here. And, you know, we're just really, really excited. And we just want to thank everybody for supporting us, for coming out, listening to the archives, coming into the chat room, calling in. We do appreciate you.
Absolutely, we do.
Definitely. And we are here. You know, the purpose, our mission with this show is to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And we also
walk by sight, not faith.
Exactly. We've been stumbling around in the dark for way too long. It's time to flip the lights on. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to remove those scales from your eyes, if you will, or the proverbial veil from your eyes. It's time for us to stand up, walk on our own, and understand the mind tricks, the Jedi mind tricks and manipulation and games that are being played with you every day from people who do not hold your interests in high regard. You know, they're thinking about their own self-interest. They're not necessarily looking to help you become a better person.
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, today our topic is Battlefield of the Mind, cognitive.
I'll help you out.
Getting tongue-tied. Here we go. But yeah, cognitive dissonance. And, you know, our call-in number for the show is 301-982-4273.
Sorry, Kim, I have to interrupt you. It's 310-982-4273.
It's okay. 310-982-4273. I have my glasses on. Usually I'm sitting here without them. Maybe I should take them off or clean them or something. Something isn't quite right there. But yeah, press 1 if you want to speak with us. And, you know, we definitely would love to have you guys on so we can talk about that. But before we go on, we posted some links in the chat room for you guys and for events that are coming up. And, Mandy, let them know about FRAM.
Yes, in December from the 17th and 18th, actually starting December 16th, you have the American Atheist Regional Atheist Meeting, which will take place at the Sheraton Suite Cypress Creek in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And there will be many speakers and entertainers. Myself is one of the speakers. I will also be participating in the diversity panel that will be taking place there. Again, that is in affiliation with American Atheists as well as the Florida Atheists and Secular Humanists. And I'm really looking forward to this. This is my first speaking engagement since being involved in the free thought activist community. So it's very, very exciting. I will be looking to, I know I have, you know, some shoes to fill with some people that have already been active in speaking. So I'm looking forward to it and hoping that we can convey the message of, you know, why we need to bring more blacks out into the free thought community and why we need to engage more. So I'm looking very much forward to that. And next year we will be involved in the Reason Rally as well as the African Americans for Humanism Conference and also other conferences that will be coming up throughout the year. So looking forward to that very much.
Excellent, excellent. And we posted all of those links in the room for you all to find and to get the information so that you can start making, you know, arrangements. The FRAM is when?
Yeah,
FRAM, when is that? When is that? Let them know the date.
Oh, the RAM is December 16th through the 18th of December.
Excellent. And the Reason Rally is in March. The information is out there. We posted the link. The African American for Humanism Conference will be held in April. So
yes,
you have plenty of time. Yes, definitely. And we're looking forward to that and seeing you guys and having you come out to be a part of it. And, Mandy, tell them how they can reach you otherwise.
We can be reached at, and I'm proud to say that we will be going through upgrades to our websites thanks to some of our very dedicated members. For right now, you can still reach us by email through blacknonbelievers@yahoo.com. Our website is blacknonbelievers.org. And you can also reach us on Meetup and Facebook. So, but, yeah, we will keep you informed of the changes as they come.
Excellent. Excellent. Fantastic. And the email address for Black Freethinkers is blackfreethinkers@gmail.com. You can also get to our website, blackfreethinkers.com, and we post the links for everybody to be able to find the information. And we look forward to speaking with you and hearing from you guys. Again, we appreciate it. Our call-in number is 310-982-4273. Press 1 if you would like to speak to the host. And our topic today will be regarding cognitive dissonance, and
yes,
the title is Battlefield of the Mind.
Yes, and also before we get into that, Kim, I'd like to acknowledge our interviews that Black Skeptics, the Black Skeptics group, conducted with us individually and that were posted individually. We were very happy to be a part of that. Professor Sakibu Hutchinson and with her group Black Skeptics, they have a blog online, and they interviewed Kim and I regarding the show and the projects that we are partaking in the near future. So if you get a chance, we will post the links in the chat room and also check out freethoughtblogs.com and look for Black Skeptics and look for our archived interviews there. We were very, very happy and proud to and honored to participate in such interviews and to let people get to know us and what we're trying to do with our organizations.
Exactly, exactly. Dr. Hutchinson and Black Skeptics Group, they were on the show actually a few weeks ago. If you all get a chance, take a listen to the archive, and you should be able to find all of that information there, as well as an interview that was conducted with Dr. Hutchinson herself a couple of months ago.
Right.
So you all may want to, you know, take a listen to that as well. All of that is in the archive. And I just posted the links to both of the interviews, so if you all get a chance, please go over there, leave a comment, just read it, and, you know, hey, we thank you again for the support. We appreciate it. And Dr. Hutchinson, you know, she's been great, you know, working with us and coming on the show, and we appreciate her and her group and what they're going for and what they stand for. We appreciate it, and, you know, we agree.
Right, absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. So, yes, we can, we already have a caller on the line. We haven't even started, but let's bring Chicago on. Chicago, are you there?
Yes, this is Judy Copeland.
Hi.
I've been wanting to call in for some time now, but I guess I finally got up the nerve to say something.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. We are glad to have you on here.
Exactly.
Well, the cognitive dissonance. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, and one of the main conflicts I ever faced was when my mom left the organization and I was still brainwashed in it. Then there was that conflict. They said, well, you shouldn't talk to your mother, yet these were the same people that taught me you always respect and obey your parents.
Exactly.
And for a while, I went along with them.
How did that make you feel? Was it very confusing or conflicting? Was it hurtful? Tell us about that.
Oh, it was so hurtful. I couldn't really rest in my mind. All these little things I was starting to see crop up, and I kept trying to bury it, like all the cruel behavior of how people shunning other people made them feel. And after a while, I had a nervous breakdown, and then I formally disassociated myself from them before they had a chance to excommunicate me, and I was kind of floating out there in La La Land for about 5 years trying to get my mind back.
Wow. I could just have you been to a therapist or doctor or like a support group to help you overcome these feelings?
Oh, I found a support group of former Jehovah's Witnesses. It seems to be a fairly common thing among certain extreme fundamentalist groups. All religions are essentially cults, but some are worse cults than others.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, with them telling you to shun even your own parents, even after they use the scripture that you are to honor your parents, in essence, they're going against the very scriptures that they teach you, which is, you know, again, another example of cognitive dissonance within the entire Bible. You know, it's like a double-edged sword. You'll find scriptures to contradict other scriptures, and then you have the traditions and the rituals, so on and so forth. But they told you not to speak to your parents or anyone who had been excommunicated from the church, but yet before then they were your brothers and sisters, and you were to love them regardless of their faults or fallibilities. And I'm sure that didn't sit well with you and other people as well, because if you had been found out that you were still talking to your family that had left the church, then they would have shunned you as well.
Oh, yes, and it also goes to show it was more about the power and control than actually adhering to the scriptures, and that's exactly what stuck to my mind, that this is probably not the so-called truth they go on about.
Exactly. Exactly. It is. It's about, you know, control of people. It's about controlling them. It's about manipulating them. It's about being able to wield the Bible and religion in general as a weapon.
Right. And also take, also take certain things and cherry pick out of whatever scriptures or texts and spin it into the way they want in order to get you to do what they want you to do.
Right.
So I guess my question to you, Judy, would be, you know, being that you were taught one thing, you know, through the scriptures, and yet the leadership is telling you something else, how did you justify that in your mind? How did you self-justify that particular situation in order to conform to the standards that were set by your church?
Well, through sort of mental gymnastics, I had to justify that Jehovah was going to make the world end soon.
Wow.
And I had to do what it takes. Of course, the world never ends. I'm still waiting for that to happen.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I just find it interesting. And do you find that even though you eventually you left, but there are some people that are still there that are still adhering to the demands made on them about not talking to different family members or ex-members that left. Do you find that these people are remaining willfully ignorant on purpose? You know, and that's what remaining willfully ignorant pretty much means, but, you know, are they in denial about the conflict there?
I think after a certain age, if you've been in there so long, that all reality is warped. I think it does something to your brain that you can't possibly think your way out of it.
Hmm.
Because
yeah,
I think of all the people I knew, they gave up retirement packages, they sold homes, they've kind of passed up the opportunity of lucrative jobs just to be full-time in the service, knocking on people's doors about this nonsense, and yet they could have had better retirements. I've been out of it for 25 years, and I imagine all the things I would have lost in my life if I stayed.
Right, because while we all want to be, you know, somewhat humanitarians and doing good things for other people, it really serves not much of a purpose if you can't do for yourself and if you don't have anything for yourself. Like, how can you do so much for others?
Exactly.
And this is, you know, it's not practical and realistic.
That is very true. That's very true. You can't assist anyone and do for someone if you can't help yourself, but that's part of the system and how they have it set up. And basically, again, you know, going back into cognitive dissonance, what they do is they'll manipulate and twist different words. It's about language. So they'll turn around when you say, well, I need to do this for me first before I give money to the church, or before I become a willing worker and give all of my talents and gifts to the church for free, while, you know, the pastor and leadership, while they're profiting from it. The minute you tell them that you're thinking about yourself first thing they'll say is you're being mean or evil or call you the devil or say that, you know, you're self-absorbed. They do these things in an effort to control and manipulate you and to force you into social conformity for the standards that they set themselves in an effort to control everything and everybody. And what
right.
I find interesting in that particular situation, the only person or the only people getting rich, you know, are the people in leadership, the pastors and their cronies, you know, the people in the inner circle of the churches. And again, they suck a lot of resources out of the community, and they put nothing back into the community. But again, it goes back. It sets up conflicting messages. They tell you to be a blessing to people, that it's a blessing to be a blessing. You know, that's some of the terminology that I've heard many, many times over the years. Yet there are times when the membership, when they need help, and basically they're turned away and told to go and pray about it. But the pastor
exactly.
Pray about it when he needed money for his bills. He basically berated the congregation into giving money that they didn't have.
Right, and how dare any, and you can't possibly question that, you know, as
that's
being
right.
Wrong. I'm sure people have thought about, like, how in the hell are we going to be scraping up money to help pay this man's bills or this person's bills who already, they already have a lot. But then, you know, you can't get help from them when you need it. Then they're going to try to make me feel bad because I have reservations about helping them. You know, and you can't dare question that, you know, for fear of being ridiculed and being ostracized and being put on blast, so to speak. So
exactly. mm-hmm. No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. And then the few churches that will help, because there are some that will help, and some of them are set up with federally funded programs like the CETA program. They'll help you with your lights and your gas, but you have to fall within a certain income range, you know, make a certain amount of money in order to receive the funding. Well, that's not coming from the church. That's coming from the federal government. And the church receives a portion. They receive a kickback. You know, the people who are working the program gets paid. They get paid an hourly, you know, wage or what have you, and the church receives a certain amount of money. So it's a win-win.
And they're tax-free organizations to boot.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, you know, what I find interesting is that when I hear some of these churches and some of the people in the community complaining about the school systems or complaining about the crime rates in their neighborhoods, and this is where my conflict comes in. You're complaining about the crime rate, yet you tell people not to judge, and in many cases they have that silence, you know, that wall of silence. And what is that called? when they don't want you to tell on anyone. What is that called? No snitching.
Yes.
So
not the no snitching, stop snitching campaigns.
Exactly. Exactly. So they don't want you to tell the truth in certain respects. So if these people do not, you know, necessarily hold people accountable for their actions, and it seems with each subsequent generation that the issues and the problems become even bigger. They've created those problems. The question is, how can you complain about something that you created, yet you still don't want to rectify that issue? Now, that's one big, giant, what I call mind screw in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's cognitive dissonance at its finest. Right, and so, you know, I just find it interesting there. And, again, you know, how are they going to rebuild these communities? How are they going to improve these communities when quite a few of their messages are the total antithesis to being able to make some real changes within the community? How? How are we going to do that? And in addition to that, you know, in some cases, you know, let's talk about some of the crime in the neighborhood. You will have people that we'll just call it street pharmacists. You have your street pharmacists, and some of them are members of the church, and they're putting a lot of money into these churches, and in some cases it's called money laundering. So, of course, you know, they're not going to speak against that type of activity because, again, they're benefiting from it. And then you also need to go and check out the background of some of these people that's over these churches, because some of them have criminal backgrounds. They came straight up out of the penitentiary and out of jail, and they help their friends when they get out of jail. Why? Because being a pastor is the new pep gang. It's the new pep gang. And they turn around and tell you not to judge, but yet if you say or do anything that's out of line, then they turn around and judge you, put you on blast straight from the pulpit. So, again, you know, cognitive dissonance, you know, it's really interesting, you know, just the whole dynamic of it. You know, one of the things that I put up, you know, in the storyboard was pray until something happens.
Oh, gosh.
And some of these people have been praying for generations. They've been praying for 300, 400, 500 years, you know, and what I find interesting is, you know, to just give an example, the Native Americans, they would do their rain dances, and they would dance until it rained, and then they would attribute that to their higher being, supreme creator, whomever. But, you know, sometimes they would be out there dancing for an hour, a day, a week, a month, 2, 3, 4 months. Well, eventually it's going to rain. How is that a miracle? I guess that's one of our festivus miracles, but, you know, how is that a miracle? You know, the cognitive dissonance, another example of it there. And it's a lot of these things that take place and that transpires and that people definitely, you know, they attribute it to God, and it's not. You know, one of the examples, another example that I put up is with that guy, Kurt Cameron. He said he doesn't celebrate Halloween because it's a pagan holiday, but he puts a Christmas tree up, which is another pagan holiday. And that's why I said the church is like a chameleon. It changes its colors. You know, Paul himself said that the church should be all things to all people. And they did that in order to recruit people into their religion, which is why it's mired in confusion. Because, you know, in many cases, they don't know about their own religion. They don't understand the history of the Bible, why it was formed, why some people feel that it's useful. It's just, it's really interesting, but they adapt even now. I remember when the church was against rock music and against rap music. Well, now you got categories of Christian rock, you got Christian rap. What's happening?
Right. I think they realize that their message is starting to fall on deaf ears somewhat. So now they have to revamp it. Now they have to market it. It's all about marketing, you know.
Exactly.
And because the church, especially the black church, has been good at tugging at people's emotional heartstrings through music, singing, dance. They now have to reformat how they're going to, you know, reel people back in. because after a while, I think someone was saying before that now these churches don't preach about the fire and brimstone type of hell anymore because they realize that it's turning people away as opposed to keeping them there. After a while, people stop getting scared, you know, and they stop feeling that guilt. So now they have to figure out new ways of trying to keep people, you know, some of the older generation is sad as, you know, I think like what Judy said, when you get to a certain age, you know, it's just like it becomes commonplace to, you know, be stagnant. But, you know, some of the older folks, you know, you may not have to worry about them, but the younger generation who's always thinking and questioning, you know, that stuff is not going to work as the years go by. So, you know, I think with the music and with the different messages, you know, they're steadily marketing.
Exactly. And, you know, the research has shown that the younger generations are falling away from the church more and more. That's the reason why we encourage the young people, use your brain, turn it on and use it, please. Please turn it on and use it. And the ones that have walked away and that have questioned things, we admire you. And, you know, my hat's off to you. You know, I will give you a hand, you know, just to let you know, we're proud of you. And, you know, thank you for everything that you've done. Because it's imperative that we start working with the younger generations and the subsequent generations to kind of pull them out of that religious indoctrination. We have another caller on the line here. We have 843, which is South Carolina. Are you on the line?
How you doing, Kev?
Hey, Frank, how are
you? Hey, what's going on?
All right, doing all right. Yeah, I was enjoying y'all conversation. Y'all was putting some good stuff down. I agree with everything y'all was saying, you know, like how I was gonna add something in on like how people follow religion. Like I saw this good documentary on YouTube the other day. It was talking about the Vikings and how they they had to, you know, slaughter virgins and stuff when they saw an eclipse, a lunar eclipse or a solar eclipse. They like slaughter virgins until, you know, the eclipse was over. And they thought when the eclipse was over that God was happy because they killed enough virgins and stuff and things like that. It's just, you know, how bad things were back then and how society brushes stuff off now to the fact that they be like, well, we're not going to do this, or oh, Jesus changed this, or, you know, we're not going to do this anymore and even don't even speak on it. And it's sad that they can brush all that stuff under the rug as much as they want, but it's still in the book. You know, when you waving a book and saying, like, oh, this is all about peace, and it says, you know, kill your neighbor if he, you know, does anything on Sunday, or kill your daughter when they get married and not a virgin and stuff, you can't talk about peace anymore. The book's got a whole lot of hate pages in it. You can't go and say this is all right and they're trying to save you. It's too much hate in it for that. I mean, God killed multiple people in the Bible in mass amounts in one strike, and you go around and say, well, this is peace and we're trying to help you and stuff, and that's not what it's all about in the end. I mean, it's from front to back, it's about, you know, punishing people, and they try and bring in a book of peace. It's not peace. None of those books are peace. They try and put Christianity as a peaceful book because in, like, most countries, Christians don't really get radical with the book, but then they look at, like, Islam and stuff and say, well, they're really radical and stuff. But, like, they're just following their book. You're being a hypocrite. You're not following your book. If you followed your book, you'd be doing the same thing they're doing. You just don't follow it. You just got enough sense to be like, it's crazy we're not doing that, but we're going to still follow the goody-goody parts of it.
Exactly. They pick and choose what they want to hear and what they want to follow. We have actually a Skype call here from OK Para.
Yes, greetings. It's Akpara. Yeah. One of the things we never really hit on, the fact is that when we were incarcerated as slaves here in America, who gave us the Bible.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came from the slave master, and the slave master selected who was going to be your preacher. And so you had to follow the directions of the slave masters, in, even from the standpoint of Christianity. Case in point, you have the passage in the Bible that says, slaves, obey your master because God has blessed those that rule over you. You know, so so we have a tendency, because of the indoctrination, to follow these things. There's another factor that's happening today. You have a lot of black men, brothers of African descent, and also women too, who were once incarcerated in prison, and because they cannot get a job, they'll go in the direction of religion, and a lot of them will continue that exploitation. And you, if you notice, a lot of churches who had who have preachers that were formerly in prison, they won't get involved very much with social issues, because if there's a situation where a church or the people of the church should stand up for themselves, the preachers are not going to get involved because it might be a violation of their parole or their situation involving their incarceration. So, you know, they play very much into, you know, the way of, you know, the racism because of their conditioning, as well as they look at it as a way that they can continue to exploit people, you know, legally, you know.
Exactly.
So we have So as far as these religions are concerned, I would say all religions for that matter, you know, because, you know, I had studied it at one time, and I had gotten into studying African history, and that's one of the things that I teach now, that we have to really look at the historical significance of ourselves, past this Christianity thing, you know, even though all religions, and I say all religions, come from us. They come from us due to the fact that we were the first people on this planet. And anything that was created during us, during the eve of creation, is really just an offset from the beginning. And of course, different changes have been put in place to benefit various powers in periods of time over history. And the ones that have exploited the most, you know, were Europeans, because they don't look at it from a spiritual perspective. They look at it from a standpoint of power and control, as a sister had mentioned earlier. So we have to become sophisticated enough from a survival standpoint to recognize these things, because it continues to be a way to exploit us and use us for their benefit.
Exactly. And I'm going to respond to that twofold. The first part is, many of them have been tricked into believing that poverty was next to godliness. You know, they use that scripture that it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get into heaven.
Right.
And so you kind of condition these people into thinking that poverty, or not having as much or not being as prosperous as they could possibly be had they kept their money and invested properly, they have them thinking that, you know, that's of the world. And, of course, they tell them to not be a part of the world. The second part that I want to talk about, we can, you know, expound on both of these, but the second part is, a lot of this is done to keep these people subjugated. And what I mean by that is, if people are in need of help, if they feel hopeless, if they feel desperate, what do? They turn around and turn to the church and turn to prayer, because that's what happened, like, right after 9/11. The people turned around and went back to church and was asking God, why did he allow that to happen? Why did he not protect, you know, the people that were in the towers, you know, from that particular situation? But to take it even further than that, with them keeping, and I'm just going to hit a little bit on this prosperity gospel, this, you know, word of faith-based religion. And it's a big industry, because what they do is they convince these people that they have to have the best clothes, the nicest clothes, the best cars. And again, when we had this little mortgage issue, you know, in the past few years, some of that was propagated from the church as well. God wants you to have a house, but yet the mortgage broker or the, you know, the real estate broker was either the pastor's wife or some of his friends or his children or whomever, so they were profiting on both ends. And
oh,
it's
yes.
a domino effect. It's
oh,
a
yes.
domino effect. But see, if we were to tell them to, if we were to actually try to convince people to come out of that mindset of consumerism and materialism, then basically, again, the car, you know, manufacturers will suffer. The clothing stores will suffer. Again, people who produce the paper, you know, because they print up a bulletin for everything. And, I mean, it's just, it's a big domino effect. So, again, yeah, some it's a lot that goes on behind it because a lot of people don't realize that homeland security also plays a big part in what these churches can and cannot say, not only the IRS but also the homeland security. These churches can apply for grants through Homeland Security in an effort to get money for to prevent terrorism. Well, in that particular case, another case of cognitive dissonance, if they're receiving funds to combat terrorism, why aren't they combating the domestic terrorism that is happening in the neighborhoods around their churches?
Oh, yeah, it's not financially profitable.
Exactly.
Right. It's also not mentally profitable either, because if they tackle the issues that are if they challenge these problems that we're having in today's society, then that means that their teachings about God and Jesus are rendered null and void. Because now you're telling people that we have to be the ones to solve our own problems, that we can't depend on some God to solve these problems for us. So therefore, they would be contradicting their own teachings, and people would see that.
Yeah, there's an excellent YouTube, and some of you may have seen it. Dealing, it's called Zeitgeist, and one is called Zeitgeist Religion, and it gives a detailed perspective of religion and the origins of things, particularly in regards to Christianity and the Jesus story. You know, those of us that are in the African-centered community, we know these things because we've studied these things, for years. My mentors were, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Professor Simmons when I was young. And what was so good about them is that they've often said, don't believe a word they say. They always said, if your mother got hit by a car, you're going to believe us, you're going to find out for yourself. Common sense would be to find out for yourself. But the reality is that common sense is not too common.
Yes, common sense is not necessarily too common, but again, we just, we have to be mindful. And this, these issues cross, cultural boundaries, but in regards to socioeconomic different, basically people who are economically and educationally disadvantaged are usually the ones that are targeted by these people. They're usually the ones targeted by these people. And, I know the movie, the YouTube movie that you're talking about, I've had a chance to kind of watch it. And it's interesting. It's interesting,
well,
but... I haven't really got into it that much, and there are people in the chat who feel that it's, horribly researched example of poor propaganda, and another person that responded that it was a joke, and so much of it has been debunked.
Well, I can understand people can say that. However, if people have not studied history themselves, then they would not know where the people from the Zeitgeist are coming from. Of course, people in Zeitgeist, as far as when they use the pictures and things like that, they're still using, origins of European pictures that were made of a Jesus or a God and things like that. But if you analyze the information for what it's worth and do your own research as far as primary evidence, you will see the truth about things. Case in point, like the story of Hercules. We have been brainwashed to believe that, Hercules, the story came from Greece, the story came from Zeus and all these kind of stuff. But the reality is that, Herodotus himself, a Greek historian, said it came from the Ethiopes and particularly the god Zeus. And if you take a look at research yourself and look at the primary images of these people, even the Greeks have pictures of Zeus being black. They have these on the urns. There's a book that's called Herculean Pompeii that was written in the late 1800s. It has colored frescoes, painted frescoes from Pompeii of the original pictures that were painted during that time of Hercules being black, and also Zeus being black, as well as all of, you know, Poseidon and many of the Greeks, as far as the mythology is concerned, are black because they originally started in Ethiopia. So we as much as people try to downplay things, you know, where's their historical references that they're dismissing things, or they're just going by what people say? And like I said, you know, don't believe what I'm saying. Research for yourself.
Right, but my question is, whether or not, and we all can agree that many of the religions, Greek, Roman, and even the Judeo-Christian, do have African derivatives. However, does it make the mythology any less any more believable or plausible just because it came from Africa? I mean, just regardless,
no.
they're all myths, even though they have an origin, they're still all myths.
I agree with you. They are myths, and because they are myths, you should find out where the origins of the myth came from. That's
absolutely.
True. Because our ancestors never denied that there were myths.
Right. It makes a good story, but you know.
They were worshiping the sun. When you look at Set and Amun and all that, they were just worshiping the sun because they knew the sun brought the day and brought warm and, you know, made the flowers open and different things. And it was all about them. You know, it was more of like a Buddhism or like a spiritual type thing. They were just worshiping the land and, you know, things that, you know, brought life and brought food to them and stuff, and they were just worshiping nature, and they brought it into being men and made it more than what it was. I mean, I could appreciate a sun worshiper before I could appreciate anybody with a religion, because it's just taking things further than what it is. I mean, if I was who, I'd be thankful. I'd go pray to the sun every day. You keep the house warm, you make my watermelons and my cantaloupes and stuff grow. I appreciate you. You're there. I see you every day, and I appreciate you. But praying a lie and all this other stuff, that's not any proven thing. The sun, you can feel the energy of it every day when you step on your porch.
Yes, our ancestors had looked, you know, today they would call it pagan. But our ancestors in its original form had looked at nature as being, actually who we are. You know, we are gods ourselves. For example, you know, the four elements.
Let's hold on a second here.
Okay.
You know, I understand, you know, this is what you believe, but I don't necessarily believe in gods, you know, us being gods ourselves. I don't necessarily believe in a master race. I don't necessarily believe that everything started and ended in Africa. I just believe that we all need to work in conjunction with each other. Now, as a person of African descent, you know, when the Mayflower and, you know, the different ships that brought, you know, the Africans here, there were some atrocities. You know, they were mistreated.
And many.
And, exactly. And we're still bearing some of the consequences of those actions, and, you know, which leads us into social justice. But again, you know, we're talking about the battlefield of the mind, and what we're trying
I understand what you're saying, and where I'm trying to take you is to the origins. It's not from the standpoint of creating mysticism. I want to talk to you about the origins of things so that you know them yourselves as being factual, not some mysticism. So when I say,
Osiris and people like that, we know that that's mythology, and we know that the Bible is nothing but badly plagiarized mythology that has been regurgitated, you know, through generations, this hearsay, And again, it's because it was a lack of knowledge for the science and history, and people made things up as they went along in order to justify the things that were happening around them. And I understand what you mean when you say you're trying to take us back to the origin, which is a wonderful thing, because, I mean, quite a few of us are history buffs, and, you know, we know where you're coming from, and we understand, and, you know, we've read some of the materials, but the dilemma, the issue is right now. How do we help people get caught up in history?
Right, and also the fact that people are refusing to look at religion in its historical context. They are refusing to let go of these indoctrinated beliefs in order to study the history. There is a refusal to do that, especially as a result of us being indoctrinated into this in this country, and also as a result of, you know, the struggles that we have been through, and also the social aspects as well. So a lot of that comes into play as to why, you know, the cognitive dissonance is so heavy and so strong. You know, yes, there is a need for people to do that, and not just black people. It's done a disservice to all cultures, you know, for them not to know the history and the origins of what they believe. However, you know, it's now about breaking that cycle and getting people to let go of that so that they can look at it in its proper context. That's the struggle that we're facing now.
I wholeheartedly understand that, and if you just let me share a little bit more, that it should reach full circle. As we know, and as the sister says, that we're dealing with now. However, just as we talk about Sankofa, you have to look back. You have to turn back to look at what was going on in the beginning to see how we got to this point as far as dysfunction is concerned. Now, when I make the point as far as nature is concerned, you know the four elements and the four qualities of nature? Do you know that?
Yes, I do.
Earth, wind, fire, and water.
And what are the qualities?
Well, I mean, they have different qualities. Water takes on the shape of its container.
Okay. Let me take you a little further. Let me share this. My name is Akpara Nosekera, Dr. Akpara Nosekera. And so I teach these things, you know. So the elements of nature are air, fire, earth, and water, and the qualities of nature are hot, cold, wet, and dry. Now, all of the symbols that represent all the religions that we commonly know today, if we're starting with the Ankh, and we look at the Star of David, we look at the cross, we look at the swastika, we look at the crescent, moon, and star, we look at the Tao symbol, the yin and yang. Now, if you can imagine these symbols in your mind, all of these symbols are based off of what is called, our ancestors call, and people call today, the laws of the opposites, the dualities of nature. Now, how this comes about, if, for example, the Ankh, now the key of life, all of you there probably, you know what it looks like. What you have is the penis of the man, the vertical part at the bottom, and you have the vagina of a woman, that's the loop at the top, and the children, male and female. You next have this is called the Star of David, or the double pyramid, or the seer's star. What this represents, the upright of the pyramid symbolizes heaven, and the down part represents earth. Okay? This is the law of the opposite.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sister.
Do you realize what kind of show this is, and the majority of us, what we represent and do not represent?
Share that with me, because this is an open forum, so share that with me.
Definitely. The majority of us are non-believers, atheists, free thinkers. Therefore, many of us do not necessarily buy into the God concept.
And that is any God or spiritual concept, not just Christianity, not just the Judeo-Christian.
If he believed in evolution,
And what I am saying to you is I don't believe in them either, none of them. However, I get into discussions with people who do believe these things. And I have to take them to as far as where they are and what they know, and go back and take them even farther as far as the origins of these things. So I am like you as well.
No, I was just going to say, and that's fantastic, and we appreciate the history lesson. But, you know, again, you know, going back to, you know, again, cognitive dissonance, talking about some of the people in the church, they do not understand the history of their Bible. They do not understand the history of their church. You talk to them about the Crusades, and again, crickets and tumbleweed. They have absolutely no clue. And while I understand and appreciate the history lesson, we're living in reality. And that's what we're, because in many cases, again, with the cognitive dissonance, many of these people are living in the past and living for a future, and that future being them going to heaven or what have you, and they have no appreciation of the present, which is now. And this is what we're dealing with. This is what we're trying to bring to their attention. This is what we're challenging them on. And if they're not interested in the history of their own Bible and religion, they're really not going to be interested in that type of history, but it's good to know because it helps us. But, you know, right now we're talking about current, you know, the current situation, challenging people to think and feel for themselves and, you know, not necessarily convert them. We just want them to think, to open their eyes.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. But again, I'm a 58-year-old man who was born and raised in Harlem, New York, who grew up with a single parent, you know, and was the oldest of six brothers and sisters, and many men and women, many men come through my house and wanted to see my mother. I lived a good portion of my life on the street. So I know where you're coming from. I've been to the bottom, basically to that outhouse, and have gone to the White House. I didn't get a PhD from being stupid man. So I understand totally what you're saying, and I support what you're saying 1,000%. But in order for
you to believe it,
I believe in myself.
I mean, are you a 5%er? Are you agnostic? Or what
I'm not any of that. Listen, this is what I tell people when people ask me what I am. I tell them that I'm all religions, and yet I am none of them. I'm all religions due to the fact that I am a black man, and all religions came from the black man and woman.
I'm none of them
because
black people are powerful than other people.
I don't believe. Listen, we are all from one seed.
Yes. Do you think that's a dominant race, or you just think that, like, everybody's equal, or you think, like, black people have some kind of, like, different, you know, dominance over other races or stuff?
I can talk to you about that from a biological perspective.
Just a yes or no answer. Do you think black people are dominant over a Chinese or Irish person or Brazilian person? Do you think they're more dominant than them?
I was trying to answer that question, and it's not a yes or no answer.
How is that not? I mean, I can say in the yes or no answer. I
know you can, but I am not you.
I'm not racist, and I can say that I don't feel a white person, a black person, a Mexican, a Eskimo is no different than me. Just like a yellow cat and a speckled cat are no different than anybody. Race doesn't matter. It's just a color. Your skin doesn't matter in anything, really. We're no different than a soda can. We're all carbon-based, and we're all the same thing. Nobody has dominance over anybody. Yeah. I'm sorry to tell you that, but we're all the same. I love a Chinese person as much as I love a Mexican or a Guatemalan or whatever. I mean, race and color and texture of your hair and stuff doesn't really mean anything. That's just being racist, really. I mean, to just be raw how I am. I mean, I don't mean to disrespect you or anything, but race doesn't mean anything. It's just your color and how you were born. I mean, I'm mixed with Indian. And I had white my family and stuff because of slavery. I don't know where it is, but I'm light-skinned, so I know somewhere down the way that somebody in my family got raped on a slave ship or in a docking or in the field or in the master's house or somewhere. So I'm not the complexion of people from my continent, so I know somewhere, but I don't hate them because of that. We're all one people, and they're evil black people, the same as they're evil white people and everything. I mean, color and all that shouldn't matter in anything, and we're no better. It's your brain and what you think of. I mean, there's no dominance because your skin is darker. You can sit in the sun with some olive oil on and tan yourself whatever color you want. There's no dominance in that.
I don't deny any of that. And if I can finish to explain that, first of all, I never said anything about
race. Yeah, let him explain, Frank, please. Let's give him a chance to explain what he's talking about.
First of all, it's not even about race, because we all are from one seed. We're all from one seed. The reason why there are differentiations as far as complexions are concerned are because of, you know, albinism. You know, whites or people with that fair skin, become albinos. And you can see this. I mean, you can look this up on the internet. You know, how
are you talking
even,
about Yaku?
Even,
No.
I'm not talking about any religion. I'm talking about science.
That's why I was saying that, like, I mean, 5% is not a religion. That's why I thought you were 5%er, because you were going off of a basis of that. But go ahead and continue. Okay, I don't go off the basis of anything.
I go off the basis of science and history. You know, on none of these religions, including the 5%ers, all of the religions have little bits and pieces of truth, but their origins are not in truth. And now, and when I, in regards to what I'm saying about black people, you know, we have the color of our skin because of the melanin. And what is the melanin for? It's to protect our skin from the ultraviolet rays of the sun. That's why our hair is curly. And whites are the complexion they are because of loss of melanin. Now, they are still our brothers and sisters. So it's not about racism. It's about clarification of origins. Because a lot of folks have not taken the in-depth study, as I have and others, in regards to this. So it's not about racism.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, whoever's in the background, please mute your volume, because I hear myself. I hear an echo. I need you to mute the background of your computer, your speakers there. Thank you kindly. I appreciate that. But, again, the topic today is the battlefield of the mind. And you know, going back to the topic here, one of the questions that I posed was, how can gay theists justify religious memberships when their church leadership and holy books vehemently speak against it? We have JP on the line as well, just to let everyone know. And
hello.
Again,
JP!
JP's there. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm a biologist, so I'm going to be able to also, I mean, when you guys are ready, to give some point about what biology said about all of that, because I heard, regardless of the PhD that the other guy just thought about, there are some stuff that are not true at all, and using internet as reference is not the thing.
And share it, brother.
Whenever you're ready, we'll be able to talk about it. But I don't want to. I just let you tell me when I'll be able to speak a little bit. Thanks.
I'd like to hear the brother speak about it.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's fine.
If he's saying what I'm saying is wrong, then I'd like him to share it where I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I have no problem,
because
I learn every day too.
Okay, that's fine. So you say that you got a PhD from?
My PhD is from University of New York, State University of New York.
What is the subject? What is the what are you into?
Ancient history.
I'm going to talk about mine, and I'm just asking
and,
you
and
about
that's fine.
Your own background.
Mine is ancient history.
Okay, yours is ancient history. Okay, mine is in molecular biology.
And that's fine.
Biochemistry.
Yes,
okay,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
The way you work in history and the way people work in biology is different. Because okay, you said some stuff about how biology is, and I'm like, okay, this is not from the point of view.
And I want you to share where you said that I was wrong.
Okay.
He's trying to do that right now.
First point that I heard, because I was not there from the beginning. So the first point that I heard, you said that it's our the first you know, blacks, first human were black, so therefore it's us. And that's my first point, but I'm saying no. Because we are all from the same origin, that's true. That's I agree with you. Until now, science is saying that our origin is from Africa. So recent genetic studies show that people were like dark brown skin and you have different mutation.
Yes.
Regardless of albinism. Albinism is something else that happened even in white people.
Of course.
White people are not from albinism. There are some other lots different mutation in different genes involved in skin color, in the shape of the hair and the eye that happen in several times in several places. So regardless of that. But I'm saying between 10,000 and 20,000 before the common era, people were,
right,
as we have now about the evidence, brown, dark skins. That's we have lots of evidence about that. So I agree with the fact that lots of people don't talk about it, but that's one point. But it doesn't mean that because our ancestors, all human beings, had dark skin, therefore it is like it is us. No, it is not us. It is our parents. Our parents we share with Asian, Europeans, Native Americans, whoever.
I do not deny, as nowadays, I'm just finishing the first point. Yes.
Nowadays, we are dark skin and plus minus different types of skin color. But we have no white to say this is our ancestor and therefore it's us, black people nowadays, who have to speak about this and that. No, we cannot. We share common ancestry with all of them. That's one point.
Okay, you know? my head on that point.
Yeah, you can answer my point.
Okay, I did not denounce any of that. The origins.
Oh, but you say it's us.
Who's us?
You said it's.
I didn't say us. It's our ancestors. Oh. We all of us came from the ancestors, black and white.
Okay.
So
I'm not denying anything you're saying. Everybody came from the software.
Okay. Kim is speaking. Please let her speak.
We all have ancestors. We all came from somewhere. You know, Lucy, Neanderthals. You had Neanderthals, which was a totally different hominid. And you know, but anyway, it all boils down to the fact that we will do a show on racism in the future, and how the derivatives of racism, and you know, on both ends. And we will discuss that then. But right now, the topic is battlefield of the mind, and people are tuned in because they want to hear about that. We want to talk about, you know, how these people gain psychological control over people that, you know, believe in religion, that follow religion, that fall into these cults, because in many cases they're cults, and that's what we need to focus on. And while I understand you want to talk about the history of it, that's fine. When we have a show on that, we can discuss that more in depth. But we're talking about the present. We have to talk about the present because we're living in the present. And that's the important thing today. People need to know how to climb out of these pits right now. Okay? And I understand how, you know, some people want to understand how the pits were dug and all of that. And I understand we've all fallen into ditches in our lives. But just because, you know, when you look, it's just interesting, but yes, our topic is battlefield of the mind, and let's talk about that. You know, one of the questions was, you know, that I put out there was, how can the church defend its stance when you have certain denominations that fully accept behaviors that others, you know? A good example of that is the Lutheran Church. The Lutheran Church ordains, you know, women and homosexuals, but yet other members of the Christian community, they condemn it. And also, how can gay deists attend churches when, in many cases, their leadership speaks against it and use scriptures like the Bible to browbeat them? How can you sit there comfortably? consciously and allow that to happen. Those are examples of cognitive dissonance. We need to figure out some solutions now. Understand, we know where it came from, we know how it derived, we know how we got to this point. But now we have to help the people in the here and now.
Sister, can I ask you a question in regards to that? You say that you know where it came from, but how can you, in regards to the topic, how can you not talk about its origins in order to get where we are right now? Because there's a cause, and I ask this because there's a cause and effect to all things. We're talking.
There are consequences to all actions.
If we go to the origin, we have to go to a single cell organism. People didn't start on the earth. I mean, we'd have to go back to, you know, amoeba and, you know, protozoans and stuff. I mean, man wasn't here first. You agree with that?
I don't know what was here. I know
well,
I wasn't
there's
here.
Proof. I mean, there's fossils and stuff. We weren't the first things here. That's why she's not going to sit here and do a show on talking about crustaceans and amoeba.
I wasn't going back that far.
Vertebrates. I mean, it'd take a long time for us to get to where she's trying to get on the show about the present time. I mean, she didn't want to talk about single-cell organisms today. She wasn't talking about today.
I wasn't going back that far. But I appreciate what you're trying to do.
If you want to get to the beginning, we got to talk about single cell organisms. You can't have complex organisms without single cell first. That's not evolution. And we believe in evolutionists, atheists.
I'll get off the line. I only tried to help. That's all. Bye.
No. It's not so much about us not appreciating you, because we do appreciate your call. We appreciate your input. But again, you know, we were trying to stay. Oh, he left. We do appreciate him. But again, you know, this is a topic, and this is what we want to talk about. And, you know, we welcome him to call back in, you know, whether today or another day. But, again, we have to deal with the here and now. And that's been part of the problem all along. Everybody wants to live in the past because the way that the Bible is set up, they have these people attempting to live a primitive lifestyle. They have them attempting to live a primitive lifestyle, which, again, causes some of the cognitive dissonance that many of them, you know, experience. And we need to deal with what's happening now. We need to kind of shake them out of that reverie, if you will, because they're trying to look toward, you know, going to heaven and getting their just rewards then, when many of us know that that's never going to happen. Because if that was the case, then many of the actors and actresses that they have in leadership positions, they would not be stressing money and doing some of the things that they're doing. Another form of cognitive dissonance in its present tense is if these people really truly believed in the Bible and believed in the wrath of God and believed in sowing and reaping and all of those things that they profess, how would some of these people in leadership, whether it's the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church, how can they justify the pedophilia that's happening in these churches and pederasty? And when I say pederasty in this context, I'm talking about these grown men that are having relationships with little boys.
Right.
And also the sexual predators in the church. If they truly believed in their Bible and this truly guided them and they were truly convicted by the Holy Spirit or God lived in them, as they like to say, then how could they even begin to fathom the thought of doing these things that hurt people? How? That's another example of cognitive dissonance.
Whoever's in the background, can you turn down the radio?
Hello?
Thank you. Yes, hello? You still there, JP?
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have much more to say because all these differences, I mean, you'll be able to say that, but I was just... listening and trying to say that about the other dude who called and giving some stuff about biology, and I was like very uncomfortable with what he said. So I just wanted to give some points, but we'll be talking about all of that in another Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, and we appreciate that, JP.
Okay.
JP is one of our resident members of Black Nonbelievers, and we appreciate his scientific background and his input very much. So we definitely look forward to hearing that in the future.
Exactly. And, you know, Janetta just said in the room, she always wonders why people single out gay people being Christians when God of the Bible basically hates everyone.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely the truth. And the reason why I bring up, you know, gay people in particular is because it seems as though with the church in general, what they do is they focus on a particular group of people, and that's that cause, that particular cause is what they rally around. So it was, you know, homosexuals, it was abortion, and now the new flavor of the week are non-believers. And you better believe that they're getting ready to start rallying against us, especially when all of the legislation is finally passed, which discriminating against homosexuals will be a hate crime. So they won't be able to legally discriminate against them, because a lot of people don't realize that a church can have its 501c3 revoked and snatched, suspended, if they do sermons against homosexuals and someone files a complaint against them. You can challenge their 501c3. I'm talking about from a more personal aspect. How can a person, as a homosexual, you know, a gay person, sit in a church with someone telling them that they're going to go to hell because this is where they love who they love. They love someone of the same sex. How can you sit there and take all of that in and yet say that you have no issues with self-esteem, no issues with some of, you know, some of the consequences and repercussions of what's been being said to you, especially the young people? So I just find that interesting, you know. I just find it interesting, you know, in that regard. So, yeah, no, it's just not black people, not the gay people in particular, but that's one of the popular groups that they like to pick on when their sermons are going to, you know, when their sermons are flopping, then that's who they turn to. They turn against those people and they start making gay jokes. But in many cases, you know, it's been proven that the ones that have been out there railing the most against, you know, gays and homosexuals, you know, somebody pulled them out of their closet too. So, you know, it's just been really interesting.
Sure.
But, you know, going back to the, you know, battlefield of the mind, there are just different things, you know, that I find interesting regarding sex and sexuality of the Bible. They teach you that sex is dirty unless you're in a marriage in which they claim that the, you know, the marriage bed cannot be defiled. Okay. You know, when I see different things, I see strippers for Jesus, I see nymphos for Jesus, I see all of them.
Right.
Wow.
You know, that's cognitive dissonance within itself, too. But, you know, basically, you know, again, it's about having conflicting thoughts in your head. And a lot of these people justify their beliefs because no one wants to feel stupid. And I think we've stated that before. In many cases, these people go along because this is what they've been taught, and they don't necessarily want to question it. Why? Because that means that Big Mama was wrong, or, you know, Papa was wrong, or Daddy was wrong, or they were wrong. And no one wants to feel though they were stupid, that they wasted their time, their money, their resources, and their talent. And, you know, we need to deal with these particular issues and bring it out to the forefront and help these people recognize and understand the games that are being played on them.
Yeah. I think the real problem with religion is that the hell thing. A lot of people won't let go of religion because they're scared of going into an oven. They're so fearful of that, they won't let go and think, what if there's no hell? So they're so fearful of that that they're scared to think any other way. And I mean, instead of them thinking that, well, you know, if somebody's telling me not to even think about something and just believe them, you know, something's wrong. It sounds like a con. I mean, if you pull up at a gas station or something, and the guy told you, fill your gas tank up and give me your keys and just have faith in me, I'll be right back with your car. Don't ask me any questions. I mean, you wouldn't do it, but, I mean, you go into a church and that's what they tell you. And, I mean, people fall for that over and over, and they're so fearful of the hell thing that they won't, you know, think out of the box that, you know, is something else that could be, you know, a rational sense of things instead of thinking about, you know, a talking snake and stuff. They think that that's the only thing because they won't open their mind. They're closed-minded. That's the reason they won't think of anything else.
Exactly. It's a matter of being open-minded, but the problem with that is it does not benefit those in leadership. They do not want these people thinking independently. They do not want them utilizing critical thinking skills or common sense. They will tell you, and I've heard several preachers say this, that critical thinking and common sense and logic has no place in church.
Right.
Has absolutely no place in religion. And basically, if the people keep their brains turned off and allow the preacher, the preacher to continue thinking and speaking for them, basically it allows the preachers and the leadership, it allows them to remain in control. And it allows them to continue to manipulate the people, because what I find interesting, they tell the people that God will supply all of their needs according to his riches, but yet they don't apply those same principles to them. They'll get up and have 12 collections until they, you know, determine that they have the correct amount of money needed. Well, why can't God, their God, supply their own needs? Okay?
Right.
And it's just, you know, the whole thing, the dynamic of it is interesting. You know, the people in their neighborhood, you know, they complain about not enough money being spent in their neighborhoods for the schools and, you know, the potholes in the road and street lights being out and just, you know, just different things. But yet they're not demanding that the churches in their neighborhoods that receive a lot of money from faith-based initiatives as well as other grants and do not put any resources back into the community because they pay no taxes, not only on the church, they also pay no taxes on the real estate. And if you go back and you do some research on a lot of these churches, they own a wealth of real estate. But they pay no taxes.
I found out some churches don't even pay light bills and gas bills.
Exactly.
They don't really pay for anything. I mean, they have a loophole to get out of everything. Some of these churches, big churches that have all these lights and chandeliers and have the giant Christmas trees outside and stuff, they're not paying for them lights and stuff. That go back to the taxpayers. They don't pay for any of that stuff, really. I mean, those churches are funded. I mean, that's coming out of taxpayers' money. When they have these giant churches and these lights on all night and day and stuff, that'd be the taxpayers paying for it. You don't even pay for that. And it doesn't even show up when you pay your taxes.
Exactly. And in many cases, they get a lot of that property, including their churches, for a dollar or next to nothing. They pay next to nothing for a lot of that real estate. But again, you know, again, it's a mechanism to control people. So they know if they keep people confused, keep them confused in their thoughts and their actions, that they will continue to be able to control the people. But the last thing they want is for people to start thinking for themselves and to start waking up. And I'm starting to see more and more of, you know, people in religion waking up to what's happening. The worst thing that could have happened to religion was the internet, because now people are sharing information. People are no longer scared. I remember when the preachers used to have people sitting up there quaking in their boots, scared. But that's not necessarily the case nowadays. And
it helps a lot. I mean, I converted 27 people this year so far, and I got one on the tippy toes. So, I mean, it helps. I mean, I've talked to people all over the world and stuff, and it helps a lot. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I've converted them, and they've gone on and helped other people and stuff. And, I mean, it's a good thing having the internet and talk, because, I mean, I didn't until I really got on Facebook and stuff and figured out, you know, how many atheists out here. I thought I was like alone. I thought I was like a 1% of the population or something. But I mean, I got like about 1,000 friends now and stuff. I mean, it's amazing. The internet's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's good. That shows that people are waking up and people are deciding that it is better to have that peace of mind and to know and to have certainty as opposed to being scared and fearful for the rest of their lives. That's a good thing. It's a good thing when people are stop being afraid to be wrong, or you know they stop being scared of the unknown, because once you stop being afraid, then that means you are willing to explore more.
Exactly, and no one is talking about converting people to atheism. The person in the chat room has that all wrong. Again, we're challenging people to think and live for themselves, not convert them.
That's one thing. I mean, I say I didn't convert people. I help people. I mean, I never go out and try and, you know, get people to, you know, not believe in God and stuff. But through my Facebook page, and through things I do on Blog Talk and different radio shows and stuff, people call me and talk to me and stuff, and they're interested. And I give them videos and stuff like that. And then it's not me actually converting them. I might use the wrong wording, but you know, helping people open their mind. I don't do like a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon thing and knock doors or you know hassle people about it. I mean, people come to me out of their own free will. I don't, you know, pressure anybody about anything. People just like what I do. I mean, that's a small amount of people. Because most of the time I get hate calls and hate mail, I mean, from people disgusted about things I say. But the few people I help, I appreciate that. And I accept the hate mail and stuff I get and the calls because of that. Because, I mean, some things you have to endure to help people. And, I mean, I've had Muslims and Christians and different people come to me and, you know, leave that stuff and just be like, you know, this isn't real anymore. I mean, they call me any time of night and stuff, and they'd be like, you're more helpful than a pastor. And I'd be like, well, I'm just trying to help you. I mean, I'm not going to pressure you, push anything on you, but I talk to you and gave my time. I mean, if I'm sleeping, you call me, I'm going to go ahead and, you know,
you help people because it's the right thing to do. You help people because it's the right thing
to
do. Not because you're going to benefit. Right, you're not going to benefit from it. But in many cases with these actors and actresses in the pulpits there, it's quid pro quo. So they'll help someone, but in turn you have to do something, you know, to pay them back. It doesn't matter if you've been giving tithes and offerings. If you have to go to the church for help, then in turn, either they're going to, you know, send you away because they're not going to give it to you, or if they find a means in which to give you the money, in some cases, it's through federally funded programs, which the money was already there, just had to come and ask for it. However, one of the mega churches that I was once a member of, basically, if you were a member of that church and if you were a willing worker, meaning giving your time and your, you know, talents, your gifts away for free to help the church grow, if you were part of any type of team, you know, and you needed some help financially, in some cases they would find the money to give to you. They had money put to the side dedicated for, you know, special situations. However, any type of leadership position or volunteer position you were in, they would sit you down and send you through a financial class. Now, while I don't necessarily think that financial class is a bad thing, because I believe that there are quite a few people out here that need to understand, you know, finance and how it works. However, why are you sitting the person down because they needed help? And basically, I was told the reason why they sat people down is because they shouldn't have had to come for help. They weren't believing in God. You know, they didn't have enough faith. So they have to sit them down until their faith is restored. And I just
if the church is so all high and mighty, why didn't they go to a finance class and they all connected to the Lord? Why are they asking you for money?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what I used to say about the sowing and reaping.
and how they always tell you to sow money into good ground. So when you're giving money to the church, they're telling you, oh, your brother and sister, you're sowing it into good ground. They're giving you that one message right there. However, this is where the cognitive dissonance comes in. If you are sowing it into good ground and putting money in the church, and the church is prospering, why is it that the church is always asking you for money? Why aren't they sowing it into good ground? Because the way I see it is that no church should be asking anybody for any money, you know, according to the biblical principles that they espouse. They should be at the door handing out bags of money to the people. They shouldn't have to ask anybody for anything because it should be an overabundance.
That's what I tell people all the time. They'd be like, why are you so hard on churches and stuff? I'd be like, if they were giving out all that money every Sunday for people light bills and their car payment and for kids' clothes and stuff, I'd be like, you know, I don't really think the book they're doing is good, but they're doing a whole lot of good for the community, and they got a pass on me. But when the pastor's riding around with a $3,000 suit on, he's driving in a Hummer, a Cadillac and stuff, and the members coming out waiting on the bus and stuff, you know, it's messed up. I mean, you never met a preacher that's got a bus pass. You know, I mean, preachers always pretty much doing well. You always got him a Lincoln or a Cadillac or something, and he's doing good. I mean, preachers have bus pass. I mean, they're always doing good and getting money every week, and none of them jobs. I mean, the most I've seen a lot of preachers around my way have is like work at a life insurance place, or they got a funeral home, or different things. Like, they don't really work. Even if they got a place, they don't work there. They've got a tax write-off, and they got other people working there, and they're just waiting on Sunday or whatever day of the week other times they get paid. They don't work. It's a relaxed thing. And this is something like people really get disgusted. I mean, somebody probably listening right now and want to send me some hate mail. They're sending the Rhetoric Esoteric on Facebook. Preaching, the church, Christianity, and all is the same thing as a pimp and a hoe. It's the same thing. Send your hate mail. I don't care. But it's the same thing. You catching somebody on the worst part of their life and selling them a dream, and you're never going to give them nothing. And a pimp don't do nothing more than a preacher do. They do the same thing. They destroy people and take them for the goodness that they have that they can get out of them. They don't give them nothing back.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, one of the people in the chat room was asking us to verify that there is a movement within the church community that says don't pay your tithe, pay someone's light bill. And that's true. There is, you know, a movement that's saying that. But if they have the federal funds, you know, the seat of funds, utilize that. If you fall outside the parameters of that, then someone can help you with that. But, yeah, instead of paying your tithe, put that back into your retirement portfolio. Put that back into a Roth IRA, you know, something that will help you and your family. And, again, you know, stop with the smoke and mirrors. You know, why do you have to have, you know, a St. John's, you know, $700-$800 suit? And that's one of the cheap ones because St. John's is quite expensive. But why do you have to have the expensive suit? Why do you have to drive a Benz? Why do you have to do all of these things when you're trying to impress people who really don't care in the first place? But yet materialism and consumerism is taught in many cases from the pulpit because they have, and people are living vicariously through their leadership. And they say, well, you know, they get angry when we question the wealth of some of these people in leadership. And then they turn around and say, well, the celebrities have it. And so they're basically putting their leadership on the same level as a celebrity, but yet when you criticize them like a celebrity, then they want to get angry and say, leave them alone, or pull out verses like, touch not mine anointed or judge not. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
Exactly. Because they Bill Maher did the best thing on that when he got Jeremiah Jenkins on the religion list, and he called him out about his lizard shoes and his $5,000 outfit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Money and the women he got in the church and all that. And, you know, it's it's all folks that doing. I mean, they got, I mean, you don't work nowhere, and you got all this money, and you go and they, what really, like, if you ever, like, can just stomach it for a minute and watch, like, the Trinity Broadcasting Network sometimes. Sometimes I just, you know, sit the bong out and just, you know, smoke and just watch it for a minute. And you see all these nice people in the front, like three or four rows, and they all in all these nice suits and stuff. But if you just watch it for a little bit, you'll see people in the back that's all messed up. And those are the people that are giving the money from everybody from that fourth row to the pulpit. They're keeping them looking good, and they don't have nothing. They might got candles in the house lit. And, you know, they putting on all this money out to keep these people looking good. And it's sad. I mean, they got this, it's this circle in these churches, especially the mega churches. Maybe not all these, the little smaller churches, maybe it's a preacher and a couple other deacons, deaconesses or whatever. These mega churches, they got a clique and they getting all this money.
Exactly.
In the smaller churches, it's a smaller circle that's getting the money, but it's always a few portion of people that's getting the money. You don't never go in on these churches. You couldn't have went to one of these churches on Sunday and talked to the preacher and told them, well, like, look, you know, I got a drink problem. I got a crack problem. I'm on cocaine. I got a problem. I can't stop seeing strippers every weekend. I got five kids and my lights and my mortgage due. I'm going to get kicked out of my house. I need $2,500 to get my bills paid, and I'm going to start going to church. You can pick me up in the church van. Please help me. Ain't nobody going to look at you and be like, you need to pray to God and talk to that. They ain't about to give you all that money for it, even if you got the bills with you. You ain't about to get it.
Right. But see, this is the thing. You just gave a really good example of personal cognitive dissonance, whereas you have these people, they come into the church and they're broken. So, you know, they're broken, you know, emotionally, physically, you know, what have you. And let's say they come in as an addict of some sort, drugs, alcohol, or, you know, even stro, you know, sex addict. And they come to these churches, they're reaching out for help, and through their self-determination and their, you know, relentlessness, they find a way to kick the habit. Some go to AA or NA, or they may have counseling groups at the church, what have you. It just really depends on the situation. And that's the reason why when we speak against religion, why they take it so personally, because they now see that religion as being their savior, as saving them from a life of degradation. And again, they see that pastor as the personification of God or Jesus, or the, you know, some people consider Jesus God. But again, that's personal, you know, cognitive dissonance in respect that they have these conflicting views. They know they did it. They know they did the work, but it's been drilled in their head that God did it. So when you speak against the church and the Bible and God, you know, you're in essence in their mind telling them that, you know, they did it on their own. They've been taught that they can do nothing on their own, that they can only do anything if they have Christ in them or if they go through Christ. And this is where some of the confusion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's just, it's really interesting, you know, when you look at it. But like I said, you know, with religion itself, when we look at the church and how it's changed over the years, and that's why I said the church is like a chameleon. The church is like a chameleon due to the fact that it operates on fluidity that changes and adapts to keep the peace, to keep the seats occupied and warm, and it changes its colors to satisfy its members in an effort to survive and remain relevant. If the church did not adapt and change and basically acquiesce to their members and make it seeker-friendly, if you will, then people, you know, more people would leave the church. One of the complaints now from people is that, from, you know, church leadership is that
church membership, the roles are declining. Well, yeah, because a lot of people are starting to wake up and starting to see it for what it really is. We have a caller on the line. Unknown number. Are you there?
Yes, hello. This is William. I just called in. It was easier for me to hear the show. My computer kept lagging.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, did you want to say anything, or do you just want to listen here?
Yeah, I'll hopscotch in when I feel the subject come around. I kept hearing it in bits and parts throughout since the podcast started because of the lagging. But I know it's on the cognitive dissonance, and I looked it up over the week, so I'll have something to add in.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll leave you on the line, and we'll continue on. But, you know, going back to that, you know, again, Paul said in the New Testament that, you know, Christians are to be all things to all people, and that's what they have been striving for since then, which is where a lot of the introduction of the paganism or, you know, the pagan holidays, you know, that's where it came from in their religion. They were adapting to the different cultures around them, and it was a recruiting mechanism. But, you know, today, you know, with the church now, they still do the same thing. And again, as I spoke about the rock music and the rap, you know, I had never, you know, I remember when I was, you know, a little girl, a young lady, I was told that we couldn't listen to the secular music because it was of the world and it would corrupt us. But yet now you have these gospel artists, you know, remixing secular artist music and singing it in the church. And you have the choir doing secular dances, you know, it's amazing. Because I'm trying to figure out, how do the people in the church feel? I know how I felt when I had decided to go back to church in my mid-20s. And the reason why I went to church, because I was, you know, in a relationship, and I kept being pressured to go to church. And that probably was the very worst thing they could have done, because I already had issues with the church. I had, you know, my non-belief when I was 11, 12 years of age is when I decided that it was a bunch of crapola. But in an effort, you know, to understand, I started going to church, and I started seeing these things up close and personal. And that's what caused me to just totally shut the door. I mean, I've had religious friends tell me, Kim, stop talking to me. We don't want to talk about that. We don't want to hear it. And this is when I was a member of their church, and I would question some of the things happening. And I know I wasn't the only one because, you know, at the kitchen table, they would discuss some of the things that were happening in the church and things that they weren't happy with, but yet no one felt convicted enough. No one felt enough outrage to stand up and speak against the things that were happening. You know, why is that?
They're afraid of hell. I mean, that's the thing. That's the biggest thing to swallow for people. A lot of people that have talked to me and, you know, converted and stuff. That's when they call me late at night and stuff. When they're, especially people that like want to pray every night and stuff like that. They're so used to that. They get those thoughts of hell and those dreams and stuff. And hell, I mean, hell is the biggest part of the Bible that holds people back. Revelations and any other book that talks about hell is what, you know, is there to hold people in, that fear factor.
Right.
Revelations
exactly.
Is like the pimp's clothes hanger. It, you know, scares them into staying, you know, it's, I'm gonna get beat bad if I don't come back to daddy. So, you know, I go, you got to come back. You got to believe what daddy's saying. So you go in and keep bringing that money in every week and stuff. So that's the fear factor for them. I mean, if it wasn't for the fear, I mean, if the Bible didn't have hell in it and all the, you know, torment and stuff, people would look by otherwise. But it's just a bully. I mean,
I think people still, you know, ignore that anyway. They will still continue to do what they do in their everyday lives except for either Wednesday at Bible study or Sunday at either Sunday school or church service. And then they feel like even with the hell and the, you know, the torment and all that, as long as you pray and ask Jesus for forgiveness, then it's okay. So it's like they're really undermining their beliefs anyway when they do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you can do whatever you want to do. You can go rob a bank and, you know, shoot the clerk and shoot the security guard and then bow your knees and say, Santa Jesus, I'm sorry, and, you know, everything is okay. You're forgiven. So, I mean,
exactly.
You
may
not think like something that...
No, and it seems like, you know, and Frank is right, and so are you, Mandy. And basically when they do that, when they tell people that, you know, God will forgive you and everyone else has to forgive you as well, going back to that 7 times 70+ times that you have to forgive someone, to me it breeds and fosters an environment of parasitic behavior and sociopathic behavior. We actually have AABBCC on the line. They Skyped in. Are you there?
Yeah, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
You know, I called in before, it was a while ago. It's been a while since I checked out the show, but I really like the concept, and I appreciate some, you know, substantive and intellectual discussion. But I always question this idea of, and it's, maybe it's just the terminology of free thinking, comparing that to atheism. And I myself don't believe, I don't say I'm an atheist, but I don't go along with all of these organized churches. I don't believe so much in the Bible and all that kind of stuff. So I support pretty much a lot of what's being said, but just free thinkers. I think somebody mentioned earlier about it being an open mind. I totally agree with that. But most of all that I hear from you guys is just that, you know, there's no such thing as God and all this kind of stuff. So it's just kind of a curious, is it a open mind free thinking thing or is it an atheism thing?
Well, it's all encompassed. It's encompassed of all of that. Well, what it's all of, well, I know for myself, I identify myself as being an atheist and a free thinker, an atheist because there is no proof of any of the gods that have existed or that have been recorded into, you know, history. There is no actual factual evidence of any of that. So therefore, because of that, I have come to the conclusion that there is no God whatsoever.
Exactly.
Now, as far as free thinking, you know, yes, there are some atheists who are not necessarily free thinkers. However, I think that comes with us being human beings. You know, we all have our different, you know, quirks and emotions and schools of thought, you know, outside of not believing or believing in a supreme being. Now that could be determined as the difference. So we encompass all of that, I would say, on in this forum.
I think that could actually be me right there too. Like, I'm an atheist, but not much of a free thinker. Like, and people know the word bigot does not mean racism, and I am a bit of an old small town bigot. Like, even though I'm an atheist,
at least you're honest.
Yeah, you know, I see a guy in a pink shirt. I'm like, what's wrong with you, son? You know, because I'm just an old football head, small town bigot, but I'm still atheist.
Hey,
that's
so
what
this
I'm
is good,
just keeping it real. I appreciate somebody just speaks their mind and somebody that goes and trying to fake the funk and act like there's something where they be what you are, and I appreciate you more.
Hey, so let me just ask, because I appreciate the guy that said that, and both of you say you're atheists, and the one guy said he's an atheist but not a free thinker necessarily. So that's kind of my point. You know, I'm big on free thinking, having an open mind and, you know, taking in everything and just thinking about the possibilities and using critical thinking and this kind of thing. But it just seems that, like, this should be called the atheist show. And you know, I mean, hey, it's your show, you do what you want. But I'm just kind of curious. I'd like to explore the ideas, but it's like all that's going on here is bashing God. There's no God. And it's okay if you have that idea, but I guess I would throw out there something like, you know, what I'm sure you guys don't believe in a soul or what is empathy? You know, can you prove empathy?
Mm-hmm.
Can you prove these emotions?
Going into what you're saying there, you know, I consider myself more along the lines of a free thinker and a humanist.
And basically, when it goes to when I say that I do not necessarily believe that there is a God, I always tell people that he has the opportunity to prove himself to me. He
mm-hmm.
has yet to do that. I don't necessarily dismiss whether there is a God or not. I don't know, and at this point, I don't care. Okay,
right.
Until something can be proven to me. But in regards to the question that you just asked in regards to the soul, again, I came from, you know, a very religious background, and from what I have been taught, a soul is comprised of your mind, will, emotions, and those are the three basic components of that. Regarding empathy, I believe many of us do have empathy, because while we may disagree with a lot of the theists, a lot of religionists, we still understand somewhat where they're coming from, because in many cases we have been where they are. So you won't necessarily hear many of us walking up to them and saying, oh, well, you're stupid for believing this, that, and the other. We're trying to understand, and we're trying to explain things in such a way that will make sense to them. We are trying to meet them where they are. And again, that's why I say we're not trying to convert them, but we're trying to challenge them to think and live for themselves.
Right. Right, and while you know, we're definitely not bashing God, because I mean there is no there really is no God to bash. However, it's the concept of a God, and also the concept of religion, which teaches people to be closed-minded, that they should only believe what they have been taught, and disregard common sense, logical thinking, as well as you know, just a mountain load of education and history. That is what we're challenging. And these thoughts have led to the cognitive dissonance, you know, delusions, death. Religion has led to so many things that have been harmful to human beings. And we have every right to challenge that, to discuss it and debate it and criticize it.
That's right.
Hey, I'm totally supportive of all of that, and I'm going to get off, but I'll just ask you guys one more thing. So it sounds like, and I think this was mentioned earlier, that, you know, you need proof to believe in whatever, to believe in God or to believe in whatever you're going to believe in, you need proof of it.
That'd
so,
be nice, yeah.
No, which is, I mean,
yeah.
That's a logical thing, but so that would mean that if it doesn't exist now, then it doesn't exist as far as you're concerned.
If it has not been proven to exist at this point, we can conclude until we receive information otherwise. You know,
it has to be tangible.
Yep.
I mean, mm-hmm. I believe myself.
It has to be tangible.
Yes, it has to be something that can be presented that we can either hear, see, or if it, yes, and it can be it has to be duplicated.
Yeah. Like not like that, like not like those stories in the Bible where the guy goes up on the mountain and God talks to him in private behind a little booth, and then he comes back down with a notebook like, this is what he said. No, he needs to do a press conference over YouTube like Obama.
Right.
Yeah, but this story was done over and over again, though. I mean, the Bible is, you know, a robbery of other, you know, different things. I mean,
yep,
I believe in life on another planet before I believe what the Bible says. Because the Bible comes from the Book of Dead, it comes from ancient Sumerian texts, it comes from mythology and Greek and stuff and Romans. The Bible comes from a whole lot of other stolen books. I mean, it's hard to say follow the Bible because it's stolen. It's bitten off of such other stuff. I mean, it's like hearing your favorite singer go and steal a song from another singer and then go and record them and, the Bible is a robbery. Nothing is original in the Bible. The Bible, Jesus Christ, is the same thing as Zeus and Aten and Thor and Mithra and the Dionysus. I mean, more things than I can count. Jesus' story came from so many other gods before him. It's just absurd. I mean, the Bible
is just a flaw, and people
believe
it. That guy's too funny,
whoever
he is.
I hear
where he's coming from. That dude ought to be a comedian, boy.
Run against your parent. Catch me on Facebook.
All right. You guys have a good one. I think free thinking means having an open mind, and I think that there's all kinds of possibilities. But, you know, more power to you.
All right. You take care.
Thank you for calling. And feel free to call again. We appreciate it.
You know, I was kind of, you know, one thing that, hi, by the way.
This is Mario. Best of us miracle.
Hey, what's going on, Mario?
Hey. One thing that I started thinking about the more atheist I got was, does it really even matter if there is a God? Because when I'm thinking about this, there are a lot of people who believe without a shred of doubt that there is a God. They believe that shit. And because they believe it, these people are actually able to do all kinds of stuff. You go back through history, you look not just in Christianity, but Islam and everything like that. You know, almost everything humankind has done, if it didn't start with a religious inflection, religion was inserted into it, and it gave me more of a reason to do it. And I'm not just talking about the Inquisition and slavery and everything. I'm talking about a lot of things that go manifest destiny with Europeans in the country on one end and decide to sweep across it to the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, almost everything we've done has had some type of religious or God-inspired thing. Now, my point is, if these people truly believe that there is a God, and that we could be, and we as non-believers could be proven that there is a God, does that change the fact that the God is a dick and allowed people to die, or aided in their death, or didn't stop people from dying?
Right.
So if there was proof of a God to me, it wouldn't change anything to me, because you're not worth me worshiping. There's too much stuff going on in this world for me to really look at a God and say, oh, well, now it's just been proven that you're here, I guess I have to worship you now. No, you're not doing your job. You're not doing your job, man. You're not doing your job. There are too many people. I mean, there are people right now thanking God for the ability to get up on Black Friday and go out into a feeding frenzy, buy shit they don't really need, and then be thanking God for all that stuff. Why, there's some people right now who don't know when the next meal is going to happen on their path so they can fry it up and eat, because it's the only thing they got to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I thought that, because I pass by those Occupy Best Buyers on my way to work when they're out there camping out in their tents, and it's like there's a homeless guy right next to you digging in the dumpster to get something to eat. Like, you're just pretending to be homeless because you have extra money to spend. Like, you actually have time to take off of work and extra money to spend while this guy is over here digging for a sandwich.
Right. Exactly. That they'll probably pepper spray him on the way back to the car because they feel threatened that he's going to ask them for a dime.
Exactly, Kim. That happened here. That happened in my town right here. There was a lady that y'all can probably check it out on WPDE.com. There was a guy that was homeless, and a lady was coming out of a mall here, and a homeless guy asked her for some change, and she shot him.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. I am so sorry to hear that.
She shot him dead in the chest because he asked for some change.
Wow.
He said he shouldn't have came up to her like that, and she shot him dead in the chest because he came up to her and asked for some change. But, I mean, if you can wake up at 2 in the morning and go to the mall and go and buy shit you don't even need, I mean, you can't give somebody homeless a couple of dollars? I mean, what the fuck?
No, and I understand. And, I mean, I've been in situations like that, whereas I would be walking back to my vehicle or walking somewhere or what have you. One time it happened when I was walking up to an ATM, and basically it was one of those indoor ATMs that you had to get out and get into, and some guy was walking up to me, and I saw him coming, and I just clearly said, stop, do not come any further. You're making me very uncomfortable. And I said, how can I help you? And, you know, I'm getting my cell phone out, and I had it on 911, and I showed it to him. And he was like, oh, ma'am, I'm sorry. And then he just backed away and left.
not only did I not use that ATM, I still had, I called 911 as I got to my car. So, and I stayed on the phone with 911 until I left. In most cases, if you tell them to back up, they will. But if they have a gun, you can't fight and compete with the gun. You just give it to them. But it was quite presumptuous on her behalf to assume that this guy was going to, you know, rob or hurt her in any way whatsoever. But I guess, you know, she's feeling this, you know, it's either him or her. But if he was just asking for some change and he didn't present a very credible threat, then, yes, she definitely overreacted. Did they press charges against her or did they let her go?
They're still getting investigated. They ain't said nothing yet, but he was unarmed. They said he definitely was unarmed. He didn't have a knife, he didn't have a bat, and he had nothing on him. He had nothing on him. She shot him. Shot him dead in the chest. He's still in the hospital, but she shot him dead in the chest. I mean, all he did was ask for some change, and she shot him in the chest.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that. We have another 843 caller on the line, and we also have 612 on the line.
Hello?
Hello?
Is that my turn now?
Is that
Hello?
Angel?
Hello? Yeah.
Hi, Angel.
Hey, this is Angel from Carolina. I was calling to put my input in about the homeless thing. I don't have a lot going on over here, so it's going to take me a minute. You know, I don't really think that you should give a homeless person any change. I mean, sometimes maybe you should, but they take it and they use it for stuff that is, you know, no need, like habits and all kind of stuff like that, so...
I feel you on that. When I deal with homeless people like that, if they say they want some food, no matter gas station or something, I buy them some food or something before I give money if I know they got an alcohol habit or
exactly.
They got a crack habit or a cocaine habit or something. I give them some food, but it's sometimes some people be like really bad need and stuff like. I've been going down the road sometimes. I see people, like, in desperate need or something. And if I got, like, a couple of bottles of water or something in the car, I give it to them. And I see if they look really thankful about it or if they look disgusted. I know they were trying to hustle you. But it's just trying to feel people out. But sometimes you don't deal with them people all the time, so it's just a spark-of-the-moment thing. So I see what she's saying.
Yeah, for me, I don't really worry about if they use it to buy a beer because, you know, I may have used it to buy some rum if I didn't give it to them. Yeah, like they just happen to be drinking their beer outside homeless while I'm drinking my beer inside my kitchen. It's the same thing.
But
it's still getting used towards a bad habit.
You know, I don't even consider it. Now, I see somebody out there just, you know, at his wit's end point, he got to ask for money. I don't really question what he's going to use it for.
I feel you because we got to look at, like, we drinking and we doing okay and stuff in the world. And you got to look at sometimes that this man is on the street. He's living in a car. He's living, you know, in a tent or he's living in an alley or whatever. You might want to drink a lot, too, you know. And that might be the difference between him really hurting somebody that night and, you know, calming himself down and going to sleep. So I feel you on that a lot.
That money to go towards something they might need because they are homeless. I mean, come on.
Most likely, if a grown man is homeless, he's going to die homeless. Like a guy who's in his 30s homeless, in the strongest likelihood, he is not going to get back on his feet. Like, that's not being cynical. That's just realistic. That's a hard hole to crawl out of.
Yeah, because you like somebody that's been in the penitentiary for like 25 years, and they tell you you're getting free the next day and you don't want to go. You might stab a guard or something because you don't want to go home. Because you done locked in that situation. You don't want to live no other way. I mean, once you do something for so long, you're scared to live another way. But, I mean, it's hard. If you're in an area where you live with a lot of homeless people, maybe just carry you a little couple of canned goods and stuff in the car or some water or something so you can help them, you know. A little Tupperware food or something. I mean, if you see them, just carry something so, you know, if you see one, you can look out for them like that if you don't really appreciate the money. Because, I mean, some people really do need it. It's hard for everybody. But, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, but definitely. I just want to thank everybody who joined us in the chat room, everyone who called in, and everyone who's going to listen to the archive. We're down to the last minute here. And just want to let you know how much we appreciate you guys. And, you know, thank you for all that you've done. We appreciate you guys for everything. And we look forward to speaking with you guys and seeing you next week. And, you know, this was a great show. We appreciate you. And other than that, we wish you all well. Have a great Sunday. We're not going to go into overtime today. Next week, you know, should be just as fine. You all have a lovely day. And, again, we appreciate you guys. The links are in the room. And have a great Sunday, everybody.
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
Okay,
bye, everybody. Peace.
Peace.
Bye.